listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, the largest percentage of internet users in the world is in China. China has a population of 1.3 billion. They have 22,500,000 internet users. 538 million internet users, which accounts for 22% of all the internet users in the world. The United States is number two. We have a population of 313,000. We have 245,000 internet users at 10.2% of the world. We used to have very different business models. In China, the big backbone networks are owned by four stock companies, CTNet, ChinaNet, CERNet, and China Bing. And then all the internet service providers, there are three major network companies that actually deliver the internet to your door. These are, again, stock companies. You can buy stock in them, China Telecom, China Unicom, and China Mobile. And those companies decided a long time ago, I mean from the get-go, that they would decide what you could see or what you could reach and how fast you could reach it with your internet service. Now, up to this point, actually up until the last couple of years, many of their decisions have been political. Increasingly, those decisions are economic. Other corporations buy access and, hey, we want a faster connection. Here in the United States, we had, up until today, we had open internet, an open access internet, which means that the internet was served the function of basically water pipes. It did not discriminate based on the water flowing through it, on the content flowing through it. And so, therefore, companies like Comcast, the largest internet provider in the United States, could not say, you know, the New York Times spiffed us with an extra $30 million this year, so we're going to deliver them a whole lot faster to you. And we really don't like the politics of, say, for example, lessgovernment.net, and so we're just going to block them. You can't see them. Today, the United States District Court, the United States District Court for the Circuit Court for the District of Columbia ruled that the Chinese system is how it's going to be in the United States, that the big corporations are going to get to decide what you see, when you see it, how fast you see it, and they can decide it based on any criteria they choose. Here with us to defend the Chinese internet position is Seton Motley, president of Less Government. Of course, you got Less Government, you got more corporations. Hey, Seton, lessgovernment.net is the website. Welcome back.
It was lessgovernment.org, but okay.
Oh, it's .org? I went to lessgovernment.net.
That's a long story. It's not your fault. It's an old ad agency I started, and that website was supposed to be behind the door, and I'm trying to get them to put it back behind the door.
Okay.
It was a beta that got set live.
Lessgovernment.org.
That's not the only thing you got wrong in your introduction, but okay.
Okay. So how does the Chinese system benefit me?
Well, first of all, it has nothing to do with the Chinese system. Your entire paradigm of your introduction is fatally flawed. Let's just stick to the American.
Is it not true that most of the internet users in China get their information through one of three big internet service providers?
Well, we have.
And is that also not true of the United States?
No, it's not true at all.
But more than 50% of all people in the United States get their internet data through three companies.
You said who access the internet, like 295,000, is the most absurdly low number of all time. You're not even looking at wireless connections to the internet with smartphones.
I said 245 million.
You said 1,000.
Oh, then I misspoke. 245,203,319. That's
right.
The latest data.
And
in a country of 313 million. So basically anybody who's over 5 years old has an internet connection.
Exactly. And that could be wired, it could be wireless, it could be satellite. There's myriad different ways you can connect. Why do you want to choose one company over the other and allow the government to crony socialize with the Googles of the world and the Netflix of the world at the expense of grandmas emailing their grandkids? Why do you want to do that?
Well, that would be your model mixed with the Chinese model. That would be the government.
If you cannot charge the big bandwidth users for the amount of bandwidth they use, you have to socialize that cost across the board.
We already had that, Seton. You know, my wife ran over her, Louise ran over her internet usage on her phone this week because she forgot to turn her Wi-Fi on. And I just got a notice from AT&T that I'm getting an extra $100 on my bill.
Well, that's because she, that's because you had.
That has nothing to do with the Supreme Court decision. That has nothing to do with AT&T saying, we'll deliver New York Times to you really fast and easily, but we're going to refuse to deliver lessgovernment.org.
If you go into a gas station and fill up an Escalade, do you not pay more than if you go into a gas station and fill up an Escort?
In both cases, they're gasoline.
But yes.
I'm not talking about paying. This has nothing to do with what consumers are paying. This decision today had nothing to do with the price that you and I are going to pay for our internet service.
Inability to understand basic economics. Never see.
If anything, this might drive down the price of internet usage because the internet service providers now have a second revenue stream. They can go to the New York Times and say, give us money to have fast passage through our pipes. And they can go to you and me and say, give us money to have fast passage through our pipes. And maybe we don't have the cash.
All the time, Tom. You can pay FedEx to deliver it next week or tomorrow, and you pay more for tomorrow. Everybody does this, Tom. Why is it so flummoxing to you in the internet space?
This is not FedEx. We're talking about the internet. We're talking about a public commons. There is one internet. There's multiple FedExes.
But there's multiple speeds of internet, Tom. There's multiple levels of data, Tom.
I understand that, but we're talking about content. We're talking about content.
You don't understand that, obviously.
No, we're talking about content. You're standing for the Chinese model of the three big companies are allowed to pick and choose which content they deliver fast, which content they deliver slow, or which content they deliver not at all. And why is that to my advantage?
Okay, if FedEx if you can pay FedEx for next week or next day delivery, are you okay with that?
So you're saying that if Comcast comes to me and says, oh, we see that you're using a lot of the New York Times, so you will have to pay us an extra $2. Basically, what Comcast wants to do is they want to turn this into the cable TV model.
Tom?
No, hang on just a second, Steven.
What's happening, Tom?
They want to turn this into the cable TV model where they say...
It's in the mind of your brain, but it's not happening here in reality. That's not happening, Tom. Net neutrality.
This is what they argued before the circuit court. Have you read the decision, Seton?
Yeah, I've read large chunks of it. Yes, it just came out today.
Have you seen where in the decision the court walked it back itself at page 17? They said, you know, our task in reviewing as the reviewing court is not to assess the wisdom of the open internet order, but rather to determine whether the commission has demonstrated the regulations fall within the scope.
They don't have the authority to do it, Tom.
They basically apologized for their decision.
Well, that's because they're two Democrat appointees that wrote the decision.
Well, the Republican actually agreed with them.
No,
the Republicans.
The last paragraph of the dissent, the guy said what this order does is it allows some companies to get rent-seeking government assistance at the expense of other companies, and the FCC is not authorized to do that.
Government assistance?
Yes.
How?
Google pushed net neutrality for a decade. Because it saves them billions of dollars a year for all the bandwidth they use.
So you want Comcast to be able to charge Google. Well, how is that going to keep Comcast from charging you?
You understand, Tom. ESPN was negotiating with companies to pay for their bandwidth to be delivered so their customers, their consumers, their readers and viewers wouldn't have to pay. That's a boon for consumers, Tom.
So going to the cable TV model where we say, okay, these are the – I want ESPN and I want Google, but I have to pay extra for lessgovernment.org.
Tom,
that's a good thing.
This is why you don't understand how economics works.
Well, okay, I get it that you
– We haven't talked in quite some time. You haven't figured it out in the intro.
Okay.
Basic
all right.
Economics –
Well, I'll go back and do a little more study on economics. Seton Motley, his website, lessgovernment.org. Seton, thank you for dropping by.
Thank you, sir.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I think it's very interesting that we lost the open internet today. I think it's probably the biggest story. Not probably. I think it's the biggest story of the day. I'm surprised all the networks aren't all over it. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And... That was pretty amazing. In China, there are four big national networks, CNET, ChinaNet, CERNET, and Qingbing, and three major ISPs, China Telecom, China Unicom, China Mobile. You can buy stock in many of these companies, and they do decide what you see and what you where you can go. And American companies do censor to some extent. They, for example, most all of the American ISPs block foreign child pornography sites. But that's about it. I mean, that's it. That's the extent of internet censorship in the United States. But now it's going to be legal. Pretty insane. Hey, Nate.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Nate Sweet with the Big Picture is with us. I don't know how much did you hear my debate with.
I heard the end of it. I heard a lot of exclamations of that you don't know anything about economics.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's when all else fails, go to ad hominems.
Exactly.
But my point was that China has these seven companies, four big backbone companies, and three internet service providers. And their business model is, you know, we will charge you more or less depending on whether we like you or not. A lot of it was influenced by politics, but increasingly it's influenced by money. And that these guys who are opposed to an open web, open internet, are basically advocating the communist Chinese model.
Well, I just think it's interesting because the United States is the country that invented the internet. And it's been a model of open communication. It's sort of one of the last vestiges of, like, I guess you could argue, true free market or Wild West open environments left in the world. And now it's definitely, it looks like the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals has put an end to that. It's unfortunate. I think we'll see the long-term ramifications.
Well, this is in part because of a 2000 and a 2005 decisions by the FCC to not define internet service providers as common carriers. If they had done that, then the court would have ruled in the other direction, and the court pretty much said that. So now we've got to petition the FCC to say, redefine what an ISP is, and good luck with that. This is basically Google versus Comcast. It's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, battle of the tech, battle of the giants.
Yeah. So anyhow, on the Nate is the producer of The Big Picture tonight. We're going to start out with TPP and Fast Track.
Congressman DeFazio from Oregon is going to come on. He's going to talk about the latest efforts. It's actually a bipartisan bill that's been pushed in the Senate and the House.
It's actually not bipartisan. They couldn't get a Democratic sponsor in the House. They call it bipartisan. The first word of the bill is bipartisan, but they literally could not get a Democrat to sponsor it in the House.
Well, the idea is that since it's pushing through a measure that President Obama supports, that so it makes it bipartisan. But
right.
Most of his own party opposes it.
Yeah.
I guess that's sort of counterfactual.
Yeah. And this is the fast track for the TPP.
So, yeah, it is interesting though that you're seeing a lot of some of the far right members of the Republican Party stand up against fast tracking. Obviously, it's for different reasons than progressives. But even people like Michelle Bachmann have been really vocal in their opposition to fast tracking. It may not be you're not seeing as many Republicans stick up against it, but there's some vocal minority, which is good.
Right. Yeah. I absolutely get it. Hey, Jim, how long is it going to be before that first segment's up on the web? It's up now. Oh, it can't be up now. Right. Sometime in the next hour. Okay, sometime in the next hour. Be sure and check that out, Nate, because I want to use that frame as a setup. I'll email you a link to the companies. I want to use that frame that I used in my introduction to Seton for one of the questions tonight for our politics panel. Okay?
All right.
Great. Nate Sweet, producer with The Big Picture. We'll see you tonight on the panel night.
Right? I will.
You're going to be on television.
I will.
600 million homes. It should be great fun. We'll be back. So, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So, we now have if this ruling stands, and I mean, even if it goes to the Supreme Court would probably rule the same way, because basically what the ruling is saying, what the D.C. District Court said, is that what the FCC said back in 2000, let me set this up. In 1996, the Telecommunications Act, which itself I have some serious problems with, but anyhow, Bill Clinton signed this thing into law. And as with so many things, particularly from that era when Republicans were running the House, you know, I think Newt was around in 96. I'm pretty sure. Excuse me. I've got a ragged throat this morning. Pardon me. That the Telecommunications Act of 96 defined two kinds of things relative to the Internet. There are those groups that deliver the internet to the people who deliver the internet to you. In other words, these giant backbone providers. And then there are the people who actually deliver the internet to you, which in most cases is like your local cable company, your telephone company, Well, in fact, there are still a few independent ISPs floating around, but most of them run their stuff over your cable or over your telephone, and they do so in states where that's still, you know, required that they have to be able to. But increasingly, those options have been pushed out, and so now you've got basically Comcast owns most of the internet business in the United States, the largest portion of the internet business in the United States. I'm not sure if it's most, but if it's more than half, but they're the largest, and then AT&T I think is number two, and you've basically got three companies that control well over half, and probably I haven't had an opportunity to parse the numbers, but my guess would be at least five companies control probably 75 or 80% of all the internet traffic in the United States at the consumer point where you get it, and what they want to do is they want to move from a net neutrality model, which is where you get the internet and you decide what you want to see and you pay one price per month for your usage of the internet. And that price can go up if you use a lot of the internet, but it doesn't matter what part of the internet you use. Okay. So it's sort of like buying water from the water company. You have a basic price for a certain amount for, you know, the first 100,000 gallons thousand gallons that you use in a month, you pay $8 a month for, or $80 a month. I have no idea what water costs these days, and it's on our dock. I have to pump it myself, and then if you want to buy more water, you pay extra for it. Okay, so that's how the internet works right now in the United States. The way it works with cable TV is very different. You can watch cable TV all day long, or you can watch it once a month, and you pay the same basic cable fee. If you want to see more stations, if you want to see MSNBC, for example, at least with the provider that we have, it's an extra $5 a month. You've got to go to a different plan that gives you MSNBC and three or four other networks as well. If you want to see HBO, you've got to buy another plan, which includes HBO. If you want Showtime, you've got to get a different plan that includes that, and you pay more for all these things, whether you use them or not. And that's the key to the insane profitability of this kind of a system. It's something called breakage. The concept of breakage is the key to really high profit systems in business. If you can get people to pay for things that they don't use, then you make a small fortune. And I can tell you back, you know, from the days when Nigel Peacock and I used to run and Sue Nethercutt, we ran the International Trade Forum on CompuServe. And CompuServe charged $7 a month extra for access to that forum because it was a trading venue. I mean, people were in there literally making millions of dollars buying and trading, and people would come in and they'd offer shiploads of shrimp or, you know, 300 tons of steel, and they were actually doing the deals on the internet. This is in the 80s. This is when CompuServe was the internet. So people paid $7 a month to sign up for it, and they just got their credit card got dinged every month forever. And this was AOL's business model early on too, just ding your credit card forever. And people would go and they would check it out for a month or two, and then they'd get bored and go away, and they'd forget that they were paying the $7. And at one point toward the end of CompuServe, probably 70-80% of the people who were paying that $7 for access to the trade forum never ever went into it. So, and that was a lot of money for CompuServe. It was presumably hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. I don't know the exact amount, but I do know that the usage went down and the billing was continuing. And so that's called breakage. So if these ISPs now can come to you and say, oh, you want access to the .XXX domains, porn? You want access to these big news sites, New York Times, Washington Post, whatever it may be. You want access to, you know, here's our basic plan. Our basic plan gives you the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Seton Motley's site. But the big plan, you know, and like that, you understand what I'm saying? They want to turn the internet into like cable TV. And because the FCC ruled back in 2000 that ISPs were content delivery mechanisms, much like the company that brings cable into your home, rather than common carriers like phone companies. See, the phone company can't charge you more based on who you're talking to. They can't say, if I call Shane, they're going to charge me a dollar. But if I call Danielle, they're only going to charge me 50 cents. They can't do that. Because they're what's called a common carrier. So if the FCC were to redefine internet service providers as common carriers and undo their own 2000 decision, then all this could be fixed. Go over to freepress.net and you can sign a petition to do that. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We need to go back to net neutrality. Net neutrality used to be called the First Amendment of the Internet. It's like everybody has free speech. Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you. So, the Chinese model is becoming the United States' model. The United States, which invented the Internet and said, you know, it doesn't matter what the content is. It's common carrier. It's like the phone company. The phone company can't listen in on your phone conversation and say, you know, that guy's making a business deal and he's going to make a lot of money. We need to charge him more for that phone call. If you want to call your broker or your bank, it costs you a buck and a half a call. But if you want to call, say, Bed Bath & Beyond, it costs you only 20 cents because Bed Bath & Beyond has paid us to reduce the fee or because, you know, we just decided. Phone company can't do that. They can't listen in to what you're doing and then charge you based on it. Neither could internet service providers, the companies that bring the internet into your home. They could not do that until today, until about an hour ago. Now, it's possible this will be overturned. It will almost certainly be appealed, and the appeal can only go to the Supreme Court. But, you know, I'm quite sure that if it's appealed, the ruling is going to be the same. Because basically all this, because the court apologized in their own decision for what they did. They said, you know, we're sorry, but, you know, because in 2000 the FCC interpreted the Telecommunications Act in 1996, you know, creating ISPs, local internet service providers, local providers of internet service, and differentiating that from backbone providers and calling, you know, and then so the Telecommunications Act of 1996 created these two entities. Now, some companies are both. Others are not. But then what happened in 2000 and then again in 2005 with Bush's FCC was that the FCC said the backbone companies are common carriers. They can't be listening into the data and speeding it up or slowing it down. But the companies at the end that deliver it to your home, they are not common carriers. They are not like the phone company. The phone company is a common carrier. Or like a trucking company, if you're moving furniture across the country, right? And you call up Atlas Van Lines or something, and you say, I want to move my stuff across the country. Now, they may ask you the value of the things that you have because they can charge you more for insurance if you want to buy the insurance. But basically, they charge by the pound because they're a common carrier. They can only charge by the pound. They can't say, you know, hey, this is, silver and, you know, sterling silver and nice chinaware versus this is old, you know, ratty dorm furniture. And so we're going to charge more. They can't do that. They can't look inside the truck. Their insurance company can, but that's a whole different discussion. So ISPs up until today were considered common carriers. And so the thing to do now is to petition the FCC to revisit and change their 2000 and 2005 decisions and make ISPs common carriers. I realize I'm throwing a bunch of technical language out here, but basically restore internet neutrality, net neutrality. And there's a petition to do that over at freepress.net. So let me encourage you to check that out. It is Rama in Williamstown, Vermont, the very first producer of the Tom Hartman program. Hey, Rama, how you doing, my old friend?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Tom?
Great, thank you.
Hey, look, listen, you've got a big part of it right, and you're very eloquent in bringing forth the issues that are involved with this court ruling and content coming into the home.
Right.
But there's a big half of it that is also
that I haven't discussed, the stuff being pushed out into the web.
Yeah, I mean, I deal on a regular basis with companies that depend on being able to put information out because I do some web development, and I don't want to self-promote here. I depend on putting out large amounts of information on regular, large, you know, high quality, large access to the internet.
Right.
And this certainly opens the door for them not only to discriminate as far as what you get coming into your place of business or home, but also what you're sending out of your place of business.
That's correct. They can charge based on, and not just on the volume of your uploads, which I'm guessing, I mean, for example, here, we pay a lot for our internet service. We have three different internet lines coming into here because we're providing a whole bunch of different streams. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that we're doing on the internet. So we pay for upload as well as for download. But we don't pay based on what it is we're carrying. Now Comcast could say, or Verizon or whoever, you know, AT&T, whatever the internet company may be, they could say, we're going to charge conservative shows, you know, look at how much money Rush Limbaugh is making. We're going to start charging conservative shows $50 a megabyte to upload. Liberal shows only $5. My guess is it'll work the other way around, but you know, they could.
A lot of small businesses ought to get very nervous about this because quite personally, they could just sit there and say, well, we have a commercial rate and we have a home rate.
That's right.
And your non-commercial home rate's going to be really cheap because we know you're just going to use it for email and sending a few photos, but your commercial rate, because your livelihood depends on it, is going to go sky high.
That's correct. And in fact, they can even ask now, like with the phone company. I mean, if you try to have a phone line at a residential rate and then use it for business, the phone company has the legal authority to come in and say, no, sorry, you have to pay the higher commercial rate.
Absolutely. Hey, Tom, one thing, though, keep up with the technical language and keep going over it and over it until it becomes common every day to people.
I agree.
They got to understand this.
People have to understand what a common carrier is. You're absolutely right, Rama. Rama, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. And thanks for listening to us online in Vermont. Carol in Longmont, Colorado, listening on AM 760. Hey, Carol, what's up?
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call, Tom.
Sure.
I'm so excited you brought this topic up today. Okay, so I'm putting a call out to all communities out there to do what my wonderful, lovely Longmont, Colorado community did about 3 years ago. We voted for a high-speed fiber optic broadband network within our community, and then 3 years later, we voted to implement it. And so now, the guy who runs it was interviewed on KGNU.org, our wonderful community radio station, and he compared it to all other internet providers going 70 miles per hour on the freeway versus we're going to be able to go 700 miles per hour on the Bonneville Salt Flats.
Wow.
And so I know it's like so cool that
so you've got instead of having a big corporation as an internet service provider, an ISP, you have your community.
It is municipalized is what I say tell people now.
Municipalized.
I don't know if it's exact. Right. It's like our electric is run by our city.
Mm-hmm.
Boulder's trying to get a municipal electric company for them because they don't want to have coal-fired power plants and all that stuff. But we've always had municipalized electric provided for
us. This is Longmont, Colorado.
Yes.
So you've always had municipal electric, and now you have municipal internet access, municipal broadband.
So everybody out there, I don't know how to petition your community. It took a struggle. It took a lot of fighting uphill with Xcel and all those other jerks that are trying to keep it privatized. Well, they're not privatized. They're run by the PUC. But still,
right.
They've got a lot of corporate interest, put it
right.
That way. But anyway, So I'm real happy about that, and I hope other communities will consider municipalizing their broadband. If this is what the game they're going to play, then we just have to play it right back.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely the way to do it, is to have your local community be the ISP and answerable to the city council, basically, which is answerable to the citizens, whereas these corporations are only answerable to the stockholders, and in some cases their stockholders are mostly in Germany or China. Carol, thank you.
Right.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, and thanks for listening to AM 760. Ryan, listening on WCPT in Fox Lake, Illinois. Hey, Ryan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Not bad. How are you?
Great.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, Rama took a little bit of my thunder, but I basically called in to say that, yeah, you know, it's dollar science that's motivating this, I think.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah, no doubt about it.
In the long run, they're going to be able to censor information. People who are in lower classes who won't be able to afford this won't be able to go on the internet as much and communicate as they can now.
Yeah.
I would think it'd be.
Yeah, it's like a lot of people, you know, they don't have cable TV in their homes. They just get the local TV stations over the air.
Right.
Because the government is still requiring TV stations to have an over-the-air signal. And so you can have a TV and not have to pay for cable. And but you can't, you know, now with the internet, it's basically you're going to have to buy the cable. You know, and you're going to have to figure out the package you want, which products you want.
And this just happened an hour ago, you said?
Yeah, it was about 4 hours ago.
Oh, okay. And you don't see any TV stations talking about it.
I don't have a TV monitor in my studio. I should turn one on.
Well, I mean, like, yeah.
But Shano has one that he's looking at, and he says it's all Chris Christie all the time.
Yeah. All right, that's...
This is a huge story. This is an absolute...
Yeah, I would say it's the story of the decade.
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I mean, this is of the last three decades, because, you know, as long as the internet has been around, or the last four or five, arguably. Brian, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to WCPT. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour. Is today the day the internet died? Is it officially? Is it going to be remembered? January 14th, Tuesday, January 14th, the day the internet died?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Or are you going to go over to freepress.net and sign the petition to the FCC to do something about this? And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And David watching Free Speech TV in Whitehorn, California. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
I was just heard you yesterday mentioning that Obama wanted to close Guantanamo Bay, but the Congress won't fund it.
Well, and today in the Washington Post, they have a breakout. There's also a breakout over at Daily Kos, and I'm sure in other places as well. Those are the two places where I saw it this morning. Of the budget that is being proposed, you know, all the details were dropped this morning, and
right.
In that budget is a line item that says no federal money may be used to close Guantanamo, transport prisoners from Guantanamo, or build facilities on the continental United States to house prisoners who are currently at Guantanamo.
Well, why don't we do a fund drive and do it with private capital?
Because they are federal prisoners.
Oh, darn it, because I'm sure people around the world, with a lot of sheiks and stuff like that, would start throwing millions at it.
Yeah, probably, and probably a lot of patriotic Americans would, but that would be the equivalent of saying, let's do a fund drive to get Don Siegelman out of prison. You know, Governor Don Siegelman is America's probably most famous political prisoner, maybe number two behind Leonard Peltier, and free-don.org, of course, is the website. But you can't, no matter how much money we raised, we couldn't go to the federal prison and say, you know, give us Don Siegelman and we'll put him in this house over here that we just built for him.
Well, then we'll have to do it with votes.
Yeah, there you go. You're gonna have to lean on some politicians. In the case of Don Siegelman, I think, you know, going to free-don.org and then, you know, signing the petition to President Obama to pardon him.
Before. I'll sign it again if they have a new one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I've signed up as a regular every month. I make a small donation to that site, you know, to that group, to the Free Don.
Donations work.
Yeah, they do. And if a lot of people kick in, you know, $10, $25, $50, $100 a month, whatever they can afford, it adds up. So free-don.org. Anyhow, David, thanks for the call. Steve in Oral Valley, Arizona?
O-R-O, Oscar, Robert Oscar.
Right. How do you say it?
Oral.
Oral. Oh, okay.
Like an oral exam.
Yeah, okay, got it.
Just a cursory statement. I noticed that on the television and the phone, there's a 16-second delay on the broadcast, so if I say something, like typically it can be edited before it goes on. But, you know, you talk about a multitude of topics on the air, and if you really collate it all together and you get to the crux of the biscuit, you'll find line is called Burke's Peerage. They're the people who are in all positions of power. And there's a young 12-year-old 2 years ago. She's now 14. She had done a genealogy background on herself and found out that 44 presidents are all related to Plantagenet, and 34 are all related to Charlemagne.
Charlemagne?
So what's wrong with that picture?
Well, it depends on how closely related they are. I mean, if they're closely related, there's something seriously wrong with that picture. If they, you know, just happen to share a little bit of DNA, then that may well be true of 40% of Americans, too.
Right. But I guess the bottom line is the multitude of topics, and I've watched you numerous times, and if you really want to get to the point, then you find out who's in power and all the positions of power, and that's all related to Burke's Peerage.
Yeah. Okay. I don't deny that there is an international aristocracy, and that a certain component of it is hereditary by virtue of the fact that wealth is hereditary. Great wealth is hereditary. You can't deny that. Steve, thanks for the call. We'll be back. Minutes before the hour is today, the day the internet died. Really? And are there still conservatives out there who are saying that's a good thing? That net neutrality is somehow an evil government takeover of the internet? I'm serious. I mean, you know, we had a guest on at the beginning of the hour who was basically saying, oh, well, you want the government to run your internet? Well, no, but I want the government to say to the people who are providing my internet that there are some things they can't do. And one of the things they can't do is notice what it is that I'm doing on the internet and then charge me based on that. And the U.S. District Court, the U.S. Circuit Court for the District of Columbia, which is the number two court below the Supreme Court, today ruled that they can do just that. Now, it may be that you won't hear about this on TV. It's going to be very interesting to see how this gets covered tonight on MSNBC, because MSNBC is majority owned by Comcast, and Comcast is the biggest beneficiary of this ruling. So will this be the story that MSNBC leads with? I don't know. I'm curious. And then the other, but it's not just MSNBC, and it's not just, you know, NBC and GE and all that. It's all of the media companies are tied up in this argument one way or the other. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this gets covered on our national television media. The next 24 hours are going to tell us a lot about who stands where. I'm fortunate that I own my own program. And so I stand where I decide to stand. And, you know, and there are some people who don't like it, and they can go listen to, you know, I guess Sean Hannity isn't the state part. They can go listen to Sean Hannity. There are others who do, and they hang out with us. Jonah in Denver. Hey, Jonah.
Hi, Tom. So net neutrality, I guess it's going to mean that maybe we'll get charged for certain features, like what we surf to.
It may well be.
Isn't that somebody else's product?
Yes, it is.
Charging for you to go to. In other words, it's one thing to discuss somebody charging me for their product when I go into their store, even if I do it by calling on the phone or mail order. It's another for to have a third party get involved.
It's the same with cable TV. It's the same with cable TV. Here's how the cable companies and the satellite TV companies work. They charge the networks that are on their system. And, you know, Free Speech TV, for example, is on Dish and Direct. They pay a fee to be on those satellites. And then on top of that, then the cable companies and the satellite companies say to you, the consumer, if you want to see these stations or these stations, it's going to cost you more or less. I mean, they come up with packages. And so they charge both the consumers and the creators, and they're not creating any of the content themselves. And they want to do that now with the Internet because they're already doing it with television. And it's working. It's working very well for them. They're getting insanely profitable. Excuse me. So that's, yeah, Jonah, that's how it works, and that's what's going to happen. Thanks for the call. Van in Los Alamitos, California. Am I saying that right, Van?
You are saying it correctly.
So what's up? Thanks for listening to KPFK.
Yesterday I was listening about the West Virginia problem there with the contamination.
Right.
Has anyone talked about OSHA? I've heard about
OSHA. EPA. Yeah, we had several callers yesterday point out that OSHA has the power to regulate and inspect below ground chemical tanks, but above ground
more than that. First of all, when the product is shipped from the factory, it has to be shipped on a registered truck line or registered carrier,
right.
And with it is a safety data sheet specifying what the product is, how it's to be handled. When it gets to the customer, and if it goes into a tank above ground, it has to be within a berm. And should there be a leak, the berm catches it all. I'm out here in California. All the refineries have that.
Right. You may well be defining state laws, not OSHA laws.
Well, that's
oh, wait a minute. You're talking OSHA, not EPA.
OSHA.
Oh, that's interesting. Occupational Safety and Health Administration. So this is to protect the workers?
Yes, and the people of West Virginia, as it turns out.
Right, right.
See, that tank, in the food operation, if they're in a food plant and they've got tanks of vinegar or all different chemicals,
right.
If they got a tank that springs loose, it's got to be contained inside of a big cement berm.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's not the case in West Virginia. Now, whether that's not the case because they're ignoring the regulations or whether that's
the point. There's the key right there.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to contact OSHA and say, what's going on here? Who delivered that product? And who was the carrier?
Right, right. Okay. Van, thanks for the heads up on that. Let me do a little digging, and I'll see where I can go with that. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. George in Forestell, Missouri. George, we have just 1 minute left in this hour. It's yours.
Oh, well, I heard you talking earlier about this Internet thing. And
yeah.
I'm not Internet savvy at all, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife is, though, but she gets on all the time. Could you explain that in more layman's terms?
Yeah, really simply what this means is that up until now, your Internet connection has been like your phone line. You don't get charged based on who you call or who calls you. You just get charged on how much you use, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, your Internet company can say, oh, you're using the New York Times a lot. We're going to charge you extra for that. Or, oh, you're using the Internet to watch the Tom Hartman program. We're going to charge you extra for that. They can decide what they want to charge you for based on what you're watching, which means that, or listening or reading, which means that they get to inspect all the details of all the data that goes through your Internet connection.
You mean to tell me that every time you get on the Internet and use it and go anywhere, they can charge you extra money for it?
That's correct. As of about 4 hours ago, that's correct. And I'm predicting they're going to be rolling out these new business models probably within a month or two. But who knows? We'll see. I mean, the appeals on this, they probably actually already have these new business models sitting in the back room just waiting. George, thanks for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV in Forestell, Missouri. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Okay, the budget is out. The budget was passed by Congress, this austerity budget. And it does not include an extension of long-term unemployment benefits, because the Republicans are calling that basically welfare, and they're saying that the only way that they want these long-term unemployment benefits to be paid, to be distributed to people, these benefits ran out 3 days after Christmas. The only way they want these benefits to be distributed to people is if we cut somebody else. Let's talk about America's real welfare queens. Republicans are all upset about people getting government benefits, but our nation's real welfare queens are this country's billionaires and its biggest corporations. But first, let's look at who the Republicans want us to think about when they use slurs like welfare queen. Back in November, the largest cuts in the history of the federal food stamp program, which is, you know, SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, largest cuts in history went into effect. And thanks to the efforts of Republicans, $5 billion was slashed from the program, directly affecting the lives of 47 million Americans. But that wasn't enough. Right? Republicans are still convinced that America is filled with people who'd rather live off government assistance than get a job. And they're still convinced that cutting food stamps will help solve the nation's spending and debt problems. So they're trying to cut even more from food stamps. I mean, right now, Congress is working on a compromise to the farm bill, which, thanks to Republicans, will likely cut billions more from food stamps and leave millions of additional Americans without access to the nutrition that they need to survive or at least be healthy. But here's what Republicans aren't telling you. In 2012, last year, well, the year before last now, the average American taxpayer, last year we've got numbers for, the average American taxpayer making 50 grand a year paid $36 in taxes toward the food stamp program. 10 cents a day. What the average household in America pays so that all across this country people can have access to food stamps. Now compare that to the fact that an average American family making $50,000 a year pays a whopping $6,000 a year in subsidies to Republican-friendly corporations. That's incredible. And I need to do the math on how much is that per day. 6,000 divided by 365. I can't do math in my head that fast. Anyway, it's a lot. So who is really causing our nation's economic problems? It's the welfare queens, the corporations. Bill Quigley points this out over at Common Dreams. You can read it over there today. He points out the Cato Institute, of all places, estimates the federal subsidies to corporations cost Americans nearly $100 billion a year. And on the state and local level, state and local governments, another $80 billion in subsidies. This is according to Louise Story over at the New York Times. Shell, Ford, Chrysler, the biggest companies in America, have received more than $1 billion each from state and local governments. And then there are the indirect subsidies, taxpayer money that indirectly benefits corporations. Researchers at the University of Illinois and the University of California at Berkeley found that American taxpayers pay a staggering $243 billion a year in indirect subsidies just to the fast food industry. That's because the fast food industry pays such low wages that we, the people, are handing over $243 billion to pay for the health care and food stamps and all the other public benefits of fast food workers. Meanwhile, our tax code has been written to favor the billionaires and the corporations. After all, they're the ones who can afford to buy the politicians who write the tax code. And that tax code saves corporations an average of $200 billion every year, while you and I have to pick up the slack. This is that same tax code that lets giant corporations like Apple and GE hide their money in corporate tax havens so that they don't have to pay their fair share. And corporate America is getting new handouts from the government on a routine basis. The Boston Globe looked at tax legislation that was passed by Congress in the first few months of 2013, and they found that that legislation contained 43 corporate-friendly tax breaks worth around $67 billion. Compare all that money that corporations are getting to the $5 billion that has already been pulled out of food stamps and the $40 billion in additional money for food stamps that Republicans want to take out. They could easily pay for the entire food stamp program just by closing one or two of the smaller loopholes that pass tax expenditures or government checks along to the top 1% and the nation's biggest corporations. There's no doubt about it. Food stamps aren't bankrupting America. The never-ending profit pipeline between Capitol Hill and corporate America is. So when Republicans talk about welfare queens, what they're really talking about are their buddies in the big banks, the big oil, giant transnational corporations, and it is time to cut off that corporate welfare pipeline and use those billions of dollars to help our economy recover and to help those Americans who need it the most. I mean, this is just common sense stuff. It's pretty amazing. Tell the FCC to restore this incredible cartoon that Jen Sorensen did at Jen Sorensen, S-O-R-E-N-S-E-N.com, J-E-N, Sorensen.com, A Nation of Moochers. And, you know, she points out that, excuse me, $17 an hour is what, excuse me, I'm very sorry. I thought I hit the cough button with my foot. I think I missed it. $17 an hour is what workers at the bottom of the wage scale would be making if wages had just kept up with productivity, right? That's according to the New York Times. And but meanwhile, you've got, you know, the corporate CEOs who can just deduct dinner and everything else. Amazing. Okay, a couple other things I wanted to talk about. Why is it that so many West Virginians are relying on water from the Elk River that got polluted by this awful chemical? Turns out, well, actually, here's a clip from yesterday's show. Maybe not. Maybe we'll play this after the break. Turns out that most people in West Virginia used to get their water from a well or from the local streams. In fact, here, listen to this. This is from yesterday's show, one of our callers.
I lived in West Virginia my whole life. I'm 67 years old. And when I was a child, for a long time, we drank out of the spring that ran out of the mountain back of our home. Hmm. Now, they did have deep mining, but that was mostly, you know, the sludge piles that you hear so much about. That's where they put their sludge. And we mostly had our own drinking water wells at our home. We had the old hand pump, you know, that you pumped it up. Mm-hmm. Well, as the years went by, they started putting water lines in, and we wondered why we were going to get drinking water out of the Elk River, which is over 60 miles from the Logan Boone County border.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the shadows of Blair Mountain where the company and
right.
the union fought the company.
Yeah.
And then the big strip jobs started coming in and massive stripping. Well, when they did that ruined our drinking water. And then we seen, well, the coal companies are going to strip all the mountains down around us. So that was the only way to get drinking water in was to bring it 60 miles away into us.
And that's from a for-profit corporation. So the original pollution of the water wells of the residents of West Virginia is what led them to need to have tap water rather than well water. And that because their well water had been contaminated by mountaintop removal. And now the well water has been, and now the tap water has been contaminated. And the tap water is being provided by a for-profit corporation that's making money. It's just, it's incredible. Incredible.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm going to give you a quick summary of the winners and losers in the budget bill that was just passed by Congress, too. So, welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Wow. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's up?
Thank you for being there also.
My pleasure.
Oh, over? I'm a Magic Jack, remember?
Oh, yeah. Over, yeah.
Listen, I had a technical issue I wanted to bring up about the water contamination in West Virginia from last week.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, I just wanted to add one name to your short list of political prisoners that I think people should be aware of for our younger listeners, and that is Mumia Abu-Jamal. He's definitely worthy of being considered for release and recompense, along with Leonard Peltier and Mr. Siegelman.
Okay. Thank you. I'm not familiar with his story. You want to give me a brief summary or direct me to someplace I can learn about it?
You can go to democracynow.org, and they've got interviews on that. You can just Google that that way and be a lot more efficient than my trying to explain in 10 minutes. Here's my deal with the water contamination. You know when you go to the store and you buy retail a gallon of insecticide and you mix it up in your pump-up sprayer for insect control in your personal property.
Mm-hmm.
And on the instructions, they advise you when you're mixing these chemicals, do not use any utensils or containers that you plan to put a liquid or food in for yourself or your pets. And they list the reasons because of contamination. And I'm thinking, why would I want to run chemical insecticide through a system of mine and then use that same system, that same pump-up sprayer, to run fresh water through for my plants I'm going to eat. In the same way, and I'm not a chemist, by the way, so maybe one of your listeners can pipe in on this, or one of your staff. But I'd like to know what the chemical considerations are for that particular contaminant, and are the municipality, is the municipality, the authority there, keeping that in mind when they flush water through the pipes that eventually lead to the pipes in people's homes?
Right.
How safe is it to drink water?
Well, the answer to your first question, the answer to your first question has to do with something called persistence. And the theory is that, you know, the ultimate pesticide is a pesticide that doesn't have long persistence. In other words, you spray it on the food, on your tomatoes, say, while they're half grown, and they may absorb it, but it breaks down fairly quickly. And so by the time you eat that tomato, you're not getting much pesticide, if at all. The fact of the matter is, the flip side of that is that persistence is considered a good thing for some pesticides because it means you have to spray them less frequently. So some farmers want more persistent pesticide. There's more and less persistent pesticides, but typically the ones that are used for home application are not real persistent. With regard to this chemical and flushing the lines, they are going to reach the point, and they're probably going to reach it today or tomorrow, where they're going to have to basically tell everybody, turn on all the faucets in your house and let them run for the next 24 hours, and let's just flush all this water down the drain and flush these lines. But they can't do that until they know that their source water is clean. But that's how they do it. I was in Australia when they had a Giardia infection of the water system in Sydney. In fact, I was in Sydney at the time. In fact, I think I might have gotten Giardia. I got really, really sick. And they had to hyperchlorinate the water system. And then they dumped that super hyperchlorinated water. They told everybody, don't bathe in this stuff, don't drink it. Just run your water faucets for a half a day or a day. And every house smelled like chlorine, but it got, you know, killed off the Giardia, these little parasites that get in the water supply. So that's how you do it. Johnny, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. We'll be back. Wines have some of the highest pesticide levels in our food chain. EcoWine.com, the organic wine company, has pesticide-free wines. That's EcoWine.com. Hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, fair and only slightly unbalanced. So, we now have the internet system of China. or, you know, our internet system, actually the better way to say it is that our internet system is going to start looking more like our cable TV system. It's not like it used to be. Like the old TVs were sort of like the old internet. You know, you could pick any channel you wanted as long as it was available. And, you know, you didn't have to pay more for Channel 9 than you did for Channel 6. Now, your internet company can say, you know, we inspect everything that you are listening to and reading and watching on the internet, and we have determined that you are spending a lot of time on this particular site, so we're going to charge you more money for that. Or if you want access to these things, you know, whatever it may be, you're going to have to pay for it. And, you know, you can call that capitalism or free enterprise or whatever. This is, for example, Citizens Against Government Waste. Right, this is one of these right-wing groups. America's number one taxpayer watchdog, they call themselves. I just got a press release from them in the mail, in email. Today, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit issued its decision in the Verizon versus Federal Communications petition for review and notice of appeal of the FCC's December 2010 open internet order. Citizens Against Government Waste has consistently opposed these unfair rules on internet service providers, rules that say you have to treat all data the same. The notion of equality on the internet may sound reasonable, but net neutrality is instead an attack on private sector business models. And that's the key to this whole thing. They go on to say proponents of net neutrality, that'd be people like me, want the online world to be forced open at the expense of successful internet providers, but fail to recognize the many trade-offs to openness, such as increased spam, fewer privacy controls, slower service, and perhaps most importantly, decreased incentives for investment and innovation. In other words, companies can't make as much of a buck off of you using the internet with an open internet. And they're right. Companies can't make as much of a buck off you with an open internet. Open internet gives them two revenue sources. They can charge you for the data, and they can charge you for the content of the data. So, it's a very, very interesting time. And I think this is the number one story in America. I don't know, Shane. We should turn this monitor on in here so I can see some network. Have any of the networks done anything on this? Have you seen anything, Shane? Yeah. New York Times has it at the top. Okay, well, that's good. So anyhow, pick up some of your thoughts on this. Jeremy in Palm Springs, California, listening on AM 1450. Hey, Jeremy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. So yet another victory for the mega Marxist socialist Stalinists. Marketing themselves as capitalists, because once again what we have is a matter of not free enterprise, with the internet net neutrality being torn down, but in fact the public subsidizes and creates something that then gets handed over lock, stock, and barrel for no cost whatsoever to private companies.
Right. We did create the internet. Yes.
Yeah, military, huge subsidies to the semiconductor industry, almost all military and NASA. And yet again,
and universities.
It just gets handled. Exactly.
And state it's universities.
That, you never hear them complaining about those kinds of things when they hand over subsidies to large corporations like that. But all of a sudden, when the public actually wants to retain what it literally owns, then, of course, they make a big stink about it when suddenly it becomes profitable because they socialize the design and the implementation and the risk onto the public.
That's right.
Which yet another piece of public property being literally stolen from us.
Well, and this is where, you know, Citizens Against Government Waste, they say the notion of equality on the internet may sound reasonable, but net neutrality is instead an attack on private sector business models. Actually, in order to say that, Alexandra Booz, who is the PR flack over at CAGW, who sent out this press release, in order for her to say that, or Leslie Page, they're offering them as guests on the topic. In order to say that, they have to first assume that the internet is not part of the commons. And this is the debate that we need to have. Most people in America don't even understand what the hell the commons is. But the internet is our information commons. And it is, because it is part of the commons, it should be open. It should be neutral. It just like, you know, I part of our commons are our roads, and you know, you don't get charged when you drive on a road based on, you know, who's in your car. You know, it's not like, you know, hey, you got a rich guy in your car, we're going to charge you more, or, you know.
Right.
So.
And why aren't we talking, like you say, about content? Because what this is really about is, you know, these like the Arab Spring is scaring the hell out of people. Information is, you know, like Jeff
power.
Said to democracy, you know, what air is to fire. Actually, I guess that was Madison.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's their view. Information is dangerous, and it's been proliferated in the past decade because of the Internet massively. And that is a grave threat to hierarchy, and that's what this is really about. They want to control the information that we receive.
Well, ultimately, I think it's not from the corporate point of view. I don't think it's so much that they want to control it as they want to profitize it. They want to monetize it.
That's one thing.
But the you know, in China they do both. They make a buck off it, and they also you know, the government is the major stockholder in most of these corporations in China that provide internet service, and so they also say, oh, and by the way, you know, the New York Times had a bad story about us today, so we're just going to cut off access to the New York Times today.
Exactly. Well, think about it. I mean, poor people who have been on the brunt end of, you know, the economic, you know, downfall, for example, and the hierarchical structures, they're not going to have access to that information because those, as Orwell said, it's the proletariat that's dangerous.
Yeah.
And it's all one agenda.
Yeah, I'm with you. Who said it's the proletariat who's dangerous?
Orwell.
Oh, George Orwell. Yeah, of course. Of course. And in the Communist Manifesto, Marx and Engels proved him right. Thank you, Jeremy. Thanks for the call. We'll be back. It's 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Is today the day that the Internet died, and are you going to get over to freepress.net, tell them I said hi, and do something about it now or not? The good, the bad, and the very, very thematariously ugly. Brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, EcoWine.com. The good, the Alexandria United Methodist Church. Their choir director, Adam Fraley, was forced out for being gay earlier this year. The parishioners at this Indiana church didn't stand on the sidelines. They took action. Since Fraley resigned, over 80% of them have quit as well. As they see it, their choir director's sexuality has no bearing at all on their ability to worship and sing together as a community. They just want their friend back. You know, a lot of people say that religion brings out the worst in people, but if the members of the Alexandria United Methodist Church are any indication, it also brings out the best in people. The bad. Senator James Inhofe. During a recent radio appearance on WABC in New York City, the Oklahoma senator went off on the global warming hoax.
Those who have read my book, The Greatest Hoax, know that this goes way back a long period of time, started by the United Nations. We pursued some of these fine scientists who said that the UN had rigged the science, and then, of course, in 2009, when ClimateGate came, people realized that the United Nations committee, you know, the intergovernmental the IPCC, had rigged the science on this thing.
Remember, that wasn't some fringe commentator or, you know, note taker on WorldNet Daily or The Blaze. That was a United States senator. That fact alone should tell you all you need to know about the Republican Party's position on climate change. And the very, very ugly Michael Essienga, Wisconsin business owner, Republican donor, finds himself embroiled in controversy this week over news that he helped write a bill reducing child support payments so he himself could pay less in child support. On Friday, Wisconsin State Representative Joel Clefish admitted that Essienga, who pays $216,000 a year in child support, helped him craft a bill that would have capped child support payments at $150,000. Clefish has since tried to defend Essienga, one of his biggest financial backers, by the way, by saying that the final version of the bill would not cover child support payments like Essienga's that have already been okayed by the courts. He told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that, "I'm certain the bill would not affect Mr. Isenga in any way because it's not retroactive. He wanted it retroactive, but it's not retroactive. Let's be honest, that's not much of a defense. Even Isenga's own bought politician admits that Isenga wanted the child support reduction to cover his own payments. That is very, very ugly. So, the winners and losers in the new spending bill. I just wanted to quickly point a few of these things out. This is the new budget for the United States. The president will sign this. Now, he did say, I've got a pen and I've got a phone, in his comments about how, you know, about the Congress not renewing unemployment benefits, but I'm not sure what the heck he meant. Maybe somebody can call and tell me. But this is a $1.1 trillion spending bill. This is the one that Patty Murray and Paul Ryan worked out. It bars federal funding to perform most abortions. Nothing new. No new funding for the health care law. There's a $1 billion cut in the Prevention and Public Health Fund. It takes $10 million out of the Independent Payment Advisory Board. This is a board that is supposed to help Obamacare save money, but it's the board that Sarah Palin called the death panels. So it got defunded. The Department of Homeland Security is going to take a $336 million cut. Most of this is TSA, but in a victory for Republicans, this is from Ed O'Keefe at the Washington Post, in a victory for Republicans who have sought for years to boost the use of private security contractors, who, I might add, this is me speaking, not Ed, make large donations to Republican legislators. The agreement increases funding for private security screeners and caps TSA's overall screening personnel at 46,000. So lots of money for the private security. The measure includes $85.2 billion for Afghanistan for military operations. That's a cut of $2 billion. $10 billion for Customs and Border Protection. There were a couple of things here that... Because of Benghazi, they cut $244 million out of embassy security. The because of Benghazi part was a joke, right? Seriously. I mean, you know, you would think because of Benghazi they would increase the budget for security of embassies, but no, they cut it by $224 million. And They banned the State Department from closing the chancery at the Vatican and merging it with the one at the U.S. Embassy in Rome, which they were doing for security reasons, by the way. And this is a project that had been pushed by George W. Bush. But Fox News got on it and said that, you know, Obama wants to close the embassy at the Vatican, and, you know, which is not true. And it just went nuts. EPA, Democrats successfully blocked attempts by Republicans to prevent the agency from regulating greenhouse gas emissions. That's good. Flood insurance, Gitmo, guns and ammo. Oh, guns and ammo. Because they're so freaked out about, why is the government buying a billion bullets? The legislation provides more money for national, it requires the DHS to provide detailed reports on its purchase and use of ammunition. And bans programs like Fast and Furious. It prohibits any funding to require that contracts bidding for federal contracts disclose campaign contributions. In other words, if you're bidding for a federal contract, by law, you can't be forced to disclose your campaign contributions. In other words, you can hide. They can hide this stuff, right? This is just bizarre. It goes on, you know. No further stuff for nuclear waste. No money for portraits. Legislation bars the postal officials from ending Saturday mail delivery. That's a good thing. One 1% pay raise for civilian federal workers and U.S. military personnel. And places overtime limits on Amtrak employees. and no federal funding for high-speed rail projects in California, the Northeast Corridor, and elsewhere. So, for what it's worth. Anyhow, back to the Internet. David in Chicago, you wanted to talk about the web?
Hello? Yes.
Hey, David, you're on the air.
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to talk about the Internet going privatized, such as that. If they do that, then a lot of businesses should be, and the credit cards especially, should be on top of this because the businesses that use credit cards have to pay a fee in order to use, you know, check your credit card every time you run your credit card.
Right.
So people are in this, or businesses are going to just stop using credit cards.
Well, no, because they pay that fee to the bank, not to the Internet company. I don't see how this is.
It has to go through the Internet to check it.
Oh, you mean because implicit in this new business model will be that the Internet's, your local Internet service provider is going to monitor everything you do on the Internet, that therefore people will stop using credit cards. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, because if they have to run it, if the businesses have to run it through there, then they're going to have to, the business is going to have to raise the price on everything.
Yeah, I think fairly safely predict that they are already monitoring pretty much everything you do. Do you know what VPN means?
Yes.
Virtual Private Network?
Yes.
VPNs, if you want your data to go through your Internet service provider without them being able to read it, you sign up for a VPN service, and a VPN service scrambles your information at your computer and then descrambles it where it ultimately is going to. And your ISP can't read the data. It just looks like, you know, mishmash. And for years, I've used a VPN service just for privacy. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm using a wireless Internet in a community where other people conceivably could hack into it. And so just, you know, it's not that expensive. What I've discovered just in the last month is that my Internet service provider now, when I use the VPN service, throttles me down to 1 megabit per second on a service that I'm paying for, I think it's 50 megabits per second or 20 megabits per second or whatever it is, but they throttle me down to 1, whereas without the VPN, I can, you know, I can bounce around 20 or 30. So,
yep.
You know, it's like there are already, and the only way that they would be know to throttle me when I'm using VPN is if they're already looking at everything I'm doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like I think that they've been getting ready for this. I really do. I think that they have just been preparing for this. You know, when our contracts expire, you know, your Internet service contract, when it expires, it's going to roll over to something brand new. We're going to see these new business models roll out. And it's just going to be a whole new world. Today is the day that the Internet died. And the one thing that you can do is protest to the FCC. They're the ones who can do something about this. And freepress.net has got a link to do something about that. So check that out. David, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Now, it's also possible that when I use a VPN, the NSA is slowing me down so that they have time to decrypt everything that's going through it. That probably actually makes more sense. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Steve in North Troy, Vermont. You have more information on the West Virginia oil spill, or chemical spill, rather?
Yeah. Hi, Tom. Greetings from the home of the Northern Lights.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was either this morning or late last night. One of the hazmat guys or the first responders commented on the concrete in the containment berm being so crumbled and corroded he wouldn't trust it to hold up a trailer, much less a house.
So there was a containment berm?
Yeah, they have to be. They're mandated. It just apparently failed.
Oh, so that caller earlier who was saying that OSHA mandates a containment berm, I thought he might be misinformed, but apparently he wasn't. He was spot on.
No, anything above ground has to have a containment berm. And regarding surface waters, the realtors and stuff haven't allowed people to drink surface water from wells for years. It's mandated that you have to have a deep well at most all new constructions. The older houses can get grandfathered in, even up here in Vermont.
Right. Right.
But if it's a new house, it has to be a deep well. And we did the same thing here in North Troy. We used to have springs. We had a beautiful spring-fed water system, but the state made us put in wells and chlorinate the stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah. And
I had another tidbit about the HHS. Remember that the patent for everything good in cannabis?
No.
Yeah, I called you last spring about the patent that HHS had given for cannabis.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, I do.
Yeah, the neuroprotectant.
Yeah.
Well, it's in this month's High Times, the March edition, and Kathleen Sebelius. HHS has granted exclusive rights for commercial development under the cannabinoids as antioxidants and neuroprotectants to Canna Life Sciences in 2011, yet the HHS still states that cannabis has no medicinal value.
Isn't that bizarre? So they're still calling it a Schedule I drug, and yet they're granting a license.
Private company.
Yeah, to a private company. See, I think that what we're watching is the disintegration of this prohibition, and you know, and a good thing it is. So,
well, think about it too. I had a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Would you inhale a carcinogenic flammable liquid to get high?
I would prefer not to.
No, but yet people have no problem drinking a carcinogenic flammable liquid.
Alcohol.
Yes, sir.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Just a thought.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. So, okay. Thank you very much, Steve. Good to hear from you. And say hi to the Northern Lights for me. Jim in Upland, Indiana. Hey, Jim, we got a minute to the break. What's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hey, I've got kind of a scenario here with the Internet thing. Wouldn't it be about the same as if you was going to send a package, say, by UPS or FedEx, and say they get to the interstate, and now they've got to pay a toll to get on the interstate, and then they've also got to pay a toll when this package gets to grandma's house or something, and they got to pay to get off.
Yes,
and
although
so
it's even worse than that. It's even worse than that, Jim. It's they're going to open the package and look at what's inside it and charge you based on the contents of the package.
Place.
Yeah.
And plus they're going to charge you a toll when you get on and a toll when you get off to get it there.
That's right. Well, they're already doing that. But they're going to, they're charging you the toll to get off, to get the information out of the Internet. You pay for the amount of data that you use, or that you upload. But now they're going to charge you based on what is in that data. And that's a whole different ball of wax. Jim, thanks for the call. Ten minutes before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Bob Ney, former Congressman Bob Ney, author of Sideswiped, the book that tells you everything that's going on in this city. Boy, does it. And brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give a gift of a goat to a returning slave in South Sudan. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I see you were talking about the Internet issue.
Oh, I've been talking about it for 2 hours. Yes, sir.
That's an amazing that court ruling. Of course, I'm sure you've extensively covered it, but that could be extremely dangerous.
It could be. Today is the day the Internet died.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Into the song.
Yeah, and the point I've been making is that China has four companies, CNET, ChinaNet, CERNET, and Qingbin, that own the backbones, and then they've got three major ISPs, China Telecom, China Unicom, and China Mobile. The government is the major stockholder in all of these, but some of them are like, you know, traded companies. And in China, these companies can decide absolutely, they can look at everything that you're looking at, and they can decide what you can see and what you can't see. They can block things, they can slow things down, they can speed things up. They can do it for political considerations, or they can do it for money.
Yeah, they can charge you more.
That's right. And the Chinese model has now become the American model. And isn't that and you got all these conservatives running around saying, "Yeah, this is great. This is great." And I'm like, "Really? You know, doing what communist China does is great?"
Good point. You know, speaking on security and those issues, the of course surveillance review panel was on Capitol Hill on the Senate side today. And I think it's going to be very, very fascinating. Arguments that are going to be put forth now. You know, we've got really kind of Senator Feinstein on one end of it I'm mentioning the Democratic side in the Senate, mm-hmm. but you've also got Senator Wyden and Senator Udall on the other end of the argument.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the panel was talking about not being able to allow the NSA to just mine all the data that they please. And that's really kind of the guts of it. Interesting question by Senator Cruz, who asked whether the justices were they were looking into their information. And they gave a flat, no, they aren't, but it wasn't so clear about the senators themselves, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Wait a minute. So they're exclusively, yeah, Shane says don't spy on the kings. So the kings and queens of America, the nine members of the Supreme Court, the NSA is definitely not spying on them, but they may well be spying on senators and members of Congress?
Oh, I would have no doubt that they are collecting data on members of Congress, data on, well, if you're anybody in the country, period, any citizen, they're collecting
right.
everything.
Right. Yeah, it seems amazing.
And the president is going to meet with lawmakers specifically about this. Both sides really are awaiting the president's thoughts on the subject and what he feels the legal standards and procedures that you know they're going to be allowed to access or not, how much information. So I think the president weighing in on this is going to have a huge, huge effect.
Yeah.
The entire thing.
Okay.
The other big issue, of course, is the $1.1 trillion spending bill has been unveiled. It takes us through to October the 1st. It's mm-hmm. being hailed as a great compromise to stop the shutdown. I think the shutdown will be stopped anyway because I don't think John Boehner would do that again.
Right.
I don't think he would be that foolish. But there's some winners and some losers in it, though. I thought of an interesting point, though, Tom, in that bill. For those complaining about Benghazi.
Right, they cut $240-some-odd million out of security for State Department
embassies. Yes, and it'll be directly affecting embassies and the security and the new construction for security measures. So I thought those who are really upset about Benghazi, I don't know how upset they're going to be about, you know, this particular issue, but they obviously should be. They're probably going to vote for it. The House will vote tomorrow and the Senate on Saturday. The jobless vote, I was really fascinated to hear your take on this. The jobless vote for the unemployment is being held, and Senator Reid, of course, Democratic head of the Senate, is giving an opportunity for two Republicans to do a bill. When you see the bill, it starts out where the Republicans are going to take the money away from the military retirees' benefits, some of that increase away. And I thought to myself, maybe Senator Reid is you know letting them come forth with their counter proposal to show just you know how much they will mess this entire thing up.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, this is a classic give them all the rope they want.
I call it the hangman's bill.
Yeah.
So I don't know where it's going to end up with that. And then the health care issue is yet still to play out, but the majority of the sign-ups of the 2.2 million, which has obviously there's more people coming into the system. The majority are female, but 45% are male. The big question was looked at today, 80%, and we don't know the figures on this, but 80% of the people are on some form of subsidy. Well, that could be small. It could be large. The big key is going to be getting younger people you know, into the system.
Right.
But people are saying, well, this will all fall apart by March, and I don't believe that. I don't think that will be the course because the numbers today were not definite numbers of exactly who's subsidized and the
who's saying it's going to fall apart? I would think by March it's going to be solid. I mean that's
well the conservatives, the people who don't you know in the House and Senate who don't want this are saying oh by March it's going to be catastrophic, and I don't believe that. I just don't think it plays out that way.
Yeah.
At this point in time, it's way too early to see.
Yeah, yeah. All of their hair on fire predictions have not come to pass. It's there's no death panels. There's no rush to the emergency rooms. There's no, all this stuff. It's like it's just not happening. Things are just moving along. They're moving along just fine.
Yes. And the last item was no criminal charges on the IRS because they found out the IRS looked into both, quote, conservative and liberal type of groups. They were
right.
basically looking in to do their job, so there are no charges that will be filed. And they've announced
well, in fact, they should have gotten a commendation for doing their job.
Well, that's right.
I mean, I don't want to be subsidizing political groups.
Either side.
Yeah.
I think that's how people feel.
You know, if you're going to have a nonprofit organization, you should be doing nonprofit work. You shouldn't be out there politicking.
That's right.
It just blows my mind. Anyhow, Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service, author of the brilliant book, Get a Copy, Read It, Sideswiped, and brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking. We'll be back. It's coming up on 5 o'clock here on the East Coast. Stick around.
Listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We have gone over the winners and losers in the budget. Today is the day the Internet died. Unless you get over to freepress.net and sign the petition to the FCC to say, you know, the Chinese model for the Internet where you've got four corporations that basically own it and they get to look at all your data and they get to charge you based on that data and block data that they don't like. That's really not how we want it here in the United States. We'd like net neutrality. So freepress.net for that, if you want to send a message to the FCC. But somebody called yesterday and asked a question that I thought was just brilliant, which is one of the problems that the medical marijuana dispensaries in Colorado have been having, and actually all around the country where it's legal for medical marijuana and now recreational marijuana, is that the banks don't want to handle their money because the federal laws call that money laundering. They make it a crime because it's still illegal at the federal level, and the banks are federally chartered or federally regulated anyway. And so they're kind of freaked out about this. So could this be an opportunity for Washington State to do what North Dakota did back in 1916, I think it was, and create a state bank or something like it? Senator Bob Hasegawa is with us. He is a state senator representing the 11th district of the state of Washington. His website, sdc.wa.gov. And Senator, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
Thank you for joining us. I understand that you are participating in or knowledgeable about legislation that will solve this banking problem that these marijuana dispensaries will have or are having.
Well, it won't necessarily solve it. It just it's a very complicated issue, and I've been working on this state bank proposal for a bunch of years now, and every year we kind of skinny it down every year trying to get the legislators to pay closer attention to it. But we had this opportunity last year when the people of Washington State passed Initiative 502, which legalized recreational marijuana. And that is going to create this huge multi-million dollar marketplace. The only problem is that it's totally unbankable. So we saw an opportunity to use this as the most recent iteration to try and get a foot in the door to create our own state bank.
That would be really great. And the benefits of a state bank, my understanding of the benefits of a state bank and why it's worked so well in North Dakota all these years, is that the state does millions of dollars or maybe billions of dollars a year in banking, and they pay fees for that banking. If they own the bank, those fees come back to them, and they go to in your benefit to the people. If they have pension funds and things invested, there's all kinds of activities that the state engages with banks. And right now, every state except North Dakota is using Wall Street banks, basically the big banks, to do these things. And if the state was to do these things, the profit from all that banking would stay inside the state. Do I have that right?
That's exactly right. You know, when you talk to people, constituents out there, average person, it's a no-brainer, and they can't understand why we don't take it seriously. But
you could lower taxes with this.
And streamline government at the same time, because, you know, the state has tons of lending programs out there, but they're all basically just loan programs where, you know, you borrow and you repay and you borrow and repay, and you're not actually using the leverage capability that you could really get from using it as a state depository.
Is it because those lending programs that the state has are administered by the big banks?
I don't know that that's necessarily the reason. The revolving loan accounts, it's just people are kind of afraid of thinking so far out of the box because it's not ever been done here.
Yeah.
And so it's an educational process to just go out on the stump and talk. I've talked with tons of organizations around the state, including public utility districts and county treasurers and whatnot, just trying to introduce them to the concept. And right. I haven't got a real negative response from anybody. In fact, I've got quite a positive response from several of these organizations.
Does your state, like many states, have contracts with Bank of America, I think is the largest that does this. I think Wells Fargo does some of them. For welfare recipients of various types, you know, food stamps, whatnot, but any state benefits where people get basically a debit card, and the banks, of course, charge a fee to the state for that, which if it was a state bank, you'd recover that fee, or you wouldn't have to pay the fee. Does the state of Washington use any service like that too?
Yeah, I believe that, well, Bank of America is where we have our main concentration account, which is the state's main checking account. But I believe that we have an arrangement with Chase to do the debit card thing for our social services.
Yeah. And yeah. So that's another area where, you know, Chase isn't going to be real happy. They're going to lose millions of dollars in profit. Bank of America is going to lose millions of dollars in profit, maybe more.
What's really interesting, though, is the bond brokers and the bonding industry this is foremost on their radar screen, I believe, because, you know, over a period of time, the state builds its capacity where we would no longer have to sell bonds to finance our capital infrastructure.
Well,
so they stand, for instance, right now, the debt service line in our appropriations budget is $2 billion. That's just money going out the window, you know, to pay interest on.
That's profit for the banks.
Exactly. So, like North Dakota, you know, you end up borrowing from yourselves. The taxpayer is borrowing the right pocket from the left pocket and paying yourself back interest.
Right.
And it's really an elegant solution. In fact, most industrialized countries in the world, this is how they built their infrastructure, was financing it by themselves.
Huh. That's interesting.
And if you look at Germany, for instance, you know, Germany has a great public banking network. So they are so on such sound footing that the whole European Union is kind of looking at Germany to keep them afloat because Germany has the capacity to be able to do it.
Fascinating. So the recreational marijuana law may open the door to this. What kind of response are you getting? What do you think the odds are that this will get passed through the legislature there in the state of Washington? We're talking with State Senator Bob Hasegawa.
It's still iffy. It's still a pretty out-of-the-box concept, although the legislature has considered. We've had hearings on the bill over the years, for the last 4 years, 5 years maybe.
But now you have a crisis. I mean, you're going to have millions of dollars.
And what's interesting is it's the only alternative available right now, short of Congress passing a law that says that removes marijuana from the Schedule I controlled substance list, which
right.
I don't put any faith in Congress to doing something like that.
Do you know if any of your colleagues in Colorado are doing the same thing or contemplating the same thing in Colorado?
I've run across a couple of Colorado representatives in national gatherings, but no, I don't think that they've been looking into this as a possible solution.
Because this,
one thing about using marijuana as the vehicle, though, to get the foot in the door is it brings along a whole different problem set that a bank on the lines of the Bank of North Dakota does not have to face. It's the whole federal regulatory system around Schedule One controlled substances.
So now you've got a bank that, even though it's a state bank, it's basically operating in violation of federal law.
Correct. And there's no getting around that. However, we have a letter from the U.S. Attorney General's office that said, make no mistake, it is an illegal substance still. But due to their limited resources, if we follow 8 guidelines and do our due diligence to make sure that it stays out of the hands of kids, that it's not supporting organized crime, it's not passing state lines, that sort of thing, if we do our due diligence to adhere to his guidelines, then they'll direct their limited resources to more efficient uses.
That's great. That's why, I mean, they really have no choice but to do that because the people have spoken. I mean,
the real question boils down to there is no zero risk involved with this effort.
Sure.
The question is, what is the acceptable level of risk the state's willing to take?
Yeah. Well, good luck on it, sir. I wish you the very best.
Thank you so much. I'm excited about the prospect.
Me too. State Senator Bob Hasegawa and representing the 11th District of the state of Washington, thank you so much for being with us.
And you're doing great work for
this. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 16 minutes past the hour coming up on that. And Jake, in speaking of Washington State in Bothell, Washington, listening to KBCS. Hey, Jake, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. First, I wanted to say, hey, that your recent book was great. Once I picked it up, I couldn't put it down. I finished it in 2 days.
The Crash of 2016.
And
thank you.
You're correct. Yes, great book. And what you were talking about, the budget that was passed today, gives me more fear that your predictions are true. But the purpose of my call today was to say, you know, the Internet was a main reason that a lot of print advertising went away, newspapers, magazines, and such. And when we got our newspaper subscriptions, we didn't pay extra for the sports sections. We didn't pay extra for the classifieds. We just paid for the newspaper. Why don't we have the Internet looked at as that sort of media?
Yeah. Well, you at least paid for the newspaper. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but we're paying for the Internet now.
Right, right. Yeah, you're right.
I pay for an Internet subscription to access the Internet, just like I would pay for a subscription to have the newspaper delivered to my house to read the newspaper every morning.
Yeah.
Instead of reading the newspaper, I read the Internet.
See, I think the difference is that a newspaper... The reason that the newspapers don't say, oh, do you want to pay extra for a sports section? And actually, some newspapers do charge extra for regional editions. The New York Times, for example, I don't know if they charge extra, but you get a different newspaper depending on where you live in the country. And I believe the LA Times does the same thing. And, you know, they localize sections and things. And they whether they charge for that or not, or it's just built into the fixed price, I don't know. But if they were to start charging extra for a sports section or start charging extra for the comics, that would open a market opportunity for somebody else to publish a newspaper to say, we're going to offer a newspaper that's just like the other newspaper, only we give a sports section away for free. With the Internet, there is a what's called a natural monopoly. I mean, you basically have two pieces of wire typically coming into your house. One is the cable line and the other is the telephone line. And frankly, where I live, I don't even have a telephone line. I simply have the cable line. And then, you know, Louise and I both have a cell phone, and that's it. We don't have a landline anymore. I haven't had for years. And that's increasingly becoming the case. So people have a single piece of copper coming into their house that can carry a signal. So if the company that owns that copper, if Verizon in this case, I mean, if Verizon was the one that won the case before the district court in D.C., if they say, we're going to start charging you extra to for anything sports. You know, if you want to go on ESPN, for example, on their website, you don't have the choice of saying, well, I'm going to call up somebody else and have them, you know, run a copper wire from, 20 miles away downtown all the way out to my house. So newspapers, I think, arguably are examples of how the marketplace works. But Internet is increasingly monopolistic. And that's the problem. That's why I think that we should consider this part of the commons, because anything that is a natural monopoly should be considered a part of the commons. Power, water, sewage, and in this case, I think internet. Am I making sense, Jake?
Yep. It makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to KBCS. Great to hear from you. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Here with you, exposing the con in conservative. And okay, net neutrality. Are we going to go with the Chinese model, or are we going to go with what we had until this morning? Just to recap, for those of you who didn't hear the first or second hour of our program, in the first hour of our program, we had a guest on who was arguing that net neutrality was a terrible thing, that Citizens Against Government Waste, for example, says, the notion of equality on the internet may sound reasonable, but net neutrality is instead an attack on private sector business models. Wait a minute. I thought that we publicly invented the internet. I thought it was originally called DARPANET, as in Defense Department. You know, it was the military developed the internet, and then along with the universities around the United States. I remember back in the 80s when I was running forums on CompuServe, and we were using the internet for FTP file transfers. And we were using the internet for CompuServe and for AOL, but there was no HTML. The web, as you know, it doesn't exist. But the internet was there, and we were doing it over infrastructure that was built out by universities and the military. I thought this was a public good. But no, Citizens Against Government Waste say, no, it's an opportunity for somebody to make a buck. So Verizon went to the U.S. District Court, U.S. Circuit Court for the District of Columbia, which is the one court below the Supreme Court. And they said, and let me just explain a little bit of these words are going to, you're probably going to, actually, I don't know if you're going to start hearing them a lot or not, because the fact of the matter is that most of our big television networks are owned by or have interlocking boards with the same companies that are the big internet companies. So you may or may not hear about this on TV tonight. And you may or may not hear about it with any depth or content. It may just be a story that's in passing, right? But here's the deal. In 1996, the Telecommunications Act, which, among other things, furthered the massive consolidation in the radio industry and led to this explosion of very large companies and towns that have no more local radio. But that's another thing. The Telecommunications Act said that there are two players in the internet business. There are the big backbone companies that carry the, say, somebody in New York wants to send an email to somebody in Los Angeles, okay? So the person in New York talks to their local internet service provider, which is ISP is the acronym for that. They talk to their local ISP. And that ISP then hands that packet of data, that email message, off to what's called a backbone company, a network provider. That backbone company then shoots that message across the country to Los Angeles, where it's then handed off to another local internet service provider that your friend subscribes to get their internet service, and bing, the email appears on their computer. And that's how it works. So there's two players. There's the internet service providers, the one in New York and the one in Los Angeles, the local companies who run the internet into your house. And then there's the giant backbone across the nation. And what the Telecommunications Act said is that giant backbone across the nation, that's a common carrier. That's like the phone company. And therefore, they cannot charge based on the quantity of data that goes through, just like the phone company can charge you on the number of minutes that you use on your phone. But they can't charge you based on the content of what's going through. The example, to use the telephone company parallel, if the phone company, if you were to call your employer or to make a business call from home, and the phone company was listening into every single phone call you made, and they said, hey, wait a minute, he's conducting business, and he's paying a residential rate. So we're going to add an extra dollar to his bill because he just made a business call. You following me? Because the phone companies are considered common carriers, they can't do that. They can't listen in on your phone conversations, and they can't bill you based on who you're talking to or what you're saying. But if they're not common carriers, then they could do that. So up until today, both the backbone companies, who were defined by law in 96 as common carriers, and the internet service provide the ISP companies, the local companies, who were defined by law as simply information providers, not common carriers. Those local ISPs, up until today, the FCC had been treating them as common carriers, saying you cannot charge somebody based on what websites they visit. You can't look at and listen to and watch everything that somebody's doing on their computer and then charge them based on it. And on the other end, and on the sending side, if somebody wants to put up a blog and it becomes a very, very successful blog and they've got ads on it and they're making money on it, you can't start charging them extra for their blog because now it's commercial. Can't do that. You can only charge them for the amount of information that goes through. And what the U.S. District Court, Circuit Court for the District of Columbia did today was they said that in 2000, the FCC basically said that the local ISPs are not common carriers. And in 2005, during the Bush administration, when the FCC was Republican-dominated, they again said the local ISPs are not common carriers. So this court decision, one step below the Supreme Court decision, they actually apologized for the decision in the decision, but they said, you know, the FCC has made these two rulings in 2000 and 2005, and so we've got to go with the definitions that they defined. So now your local internet company can do like they do with your cable TV. In fact, the cable TV model is most likely the one you're going to get. They're going to say, oh, well, you know, you can get these websites for this price, but if you want to get more websites, like websites that are outside the United States, or websites that are blogs that have fewer than a million members, or websites that have, you know, whatever, you have to pay extra. And they can say to the New York Times, you know, you want the New York Times delivered fast to people? Pay us an extra $10,000 a day. And that's really going to be their major revenue source. And this is just wrong. If you go to freepress.net, you can see the whole thing laid out and how you can petition the FCC.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
That's freepress.net for this case of Verizon versus the FCC. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, some fascinating things in the chat room today. Tom's not stupid. He won't come into this mosh pit. What? No, I do. I just don't talk very much because I can't type while I'm on the air. Thank you very much. Let's pick up some of your calls here. Tammy in Austin, Texas. Hey, Tammy, what's on your mind today?
Hi. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I'm calling about net neutrality,
mm-hmm.
and you were saying the thing that really caught my attention was when you talked about it not being defined any longer as a common carrier. We've had a lot of friends and having problems with their parents getting IP telephones that run over computer lines.
Mm-hmm.
And when they need to call 911, that part doesn't work, and
right.
They have to jump up and down and scream and yell and get it to go. But it seems to me that if you have your telephone service through an ISP, then that ISP is saying to you that it's a common carrier because it's claiming it can do everything that the regular telephone company can do.
Yeah, and in fact, Comcast is the second or third largest telephone company in the United States. But actually not. If that's all they did, then yeah, they would be a common carrier. But basically what they're saying is that we will provide some common carrier services along with, you know, bundled with your internet connection and your cable TV connection. And say what? Yeah, and well, they don't guarantee 911 anymore. I thought by law that they had to do 911.
Well, maybe they're supposed to, but they seem. I mean, for instance, the people who have my common carrier telephone line, which I'm calling you on, is a cable company, and for a long time there was like, from if you called within that company, it's, I think it's just in Texas. It's called Grande, and. But when we tried to call, if you called telephone to telephone, you could call anywhere on Grande, and it was just like a local call. Right. They've since done away with that. But what we found was when we tried to send email, my housemate's parents specifically got computer use and email so that they could communicate with their son via email. Well, we didn't get the Grande package for email. He does our own, and they were never able to their mail would all bounce back. When we tried to send them mail, it would bounce back because apparently we had an old rack of we had an IP address that had once upon a time been some sort of dial up, and there had been problems with it, and it had been blacklisted.
Oh,
and the tech support at Grande was never capable enough to be able to cope with this. And so his parents simply discontinued that.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, sometimes it's like, you know, your SMTP ports are wrong or something like that. This is I think we're probably losing a lot of people with this part of the conversation. But
I was incubated at MIT, and you know I couldn't tell the difference between BBN and Burnett Newman and the AI lab.
Wow.
But that was my second incubation.
Yeah, I guess. I remember when Louise and I first got a Vonage line back, you know, almost a decade ago, it seems like it must have been, when Vonage first started up. And we got one of their lines, and they made us jump through all kinds of hoops to establish 9/11. So either they were just being really good citizens. I assumed it was a regulatory issue that they were so hysterical about 911 on each one of those lines. But it may well be that the VoIP, voice over internet protocol, that the VoIP telephone providers are no longer considered common carrier either. And I just don't know the technical end of that.
A friend of ours, I mean, we're all of us, I'm only a couple of months younger than you are, and all of us are in that same age range where we're all having elderly parents with age, with issues, health issues, and maybe only one parent. So, you know, that 911 call becomes incredibly important. I mean, that 911 service, the older you get, the more important it is.
Yeah, you're right.
And so one of our friends just went and jumped up and down and yelled at, well, actually he didn't. He's actually very eloquent, and he's incredibly diplomatic. But he actually finally managed to force the company to get 911 coverage on his mother's phone.
Good.
Internet phone.
Good. So that's something to check for.
It took a lot out of him. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something to check for if you have internet telephone service. Is, you know, try dialing 911 and see what happens, and you know, quickly apologize if you you know, because you're not supposed to spam them. But make sure that it works. And if it doesn't work, be sure to contact your whoever the company is that's providing it. Tammy, I gotta move along. But thank you for the call. Thank you so much. A very, very thoughtful and well-informed call. Jonathan in Seattle, listening on KBCS. Hey, Jonathan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Honored to be on your show.
I've given
up NPR for you.
Thank you.
Okay, this relates to the recent internet court decision and the consolidation of the industry for monopoly profits.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here in Seattle, and my wireless internet provider is Clearwire, and it's not one of the big three ISPs, but it has 10 million subscribers.
But Clearwire is now owned by Verizon, are they not?
That's what I'm getting to. It's Clearwire is really slow. I didn't want to support Comcast, but they were just bought by Verizon, and that was last month, and I was wondering at the time, why did Verizon want to buy Clearwire? Well, now I know. They have a larger customer base for the new internet age of monetization.
Right. So they get now they've expanded their basic ISP business, and the ISP business is going to be the new profit center for these guys in this new brave new world. Excellent point, Jonathan. Thank you for calling and sharing that. By the way, breaking news, the Senate just rejected extending unemployment benefits 52 to 48. Now, I don't know if that means that they failed to block a filibuster. Yeah, 52 to 48 has to be. There was 52 votes in favor of extending unemployment benefits, which would be basically every Democrat in the Senate. And all the Republicans voted against extending unemployment benefits. Does that make sense? 52 plus 48 is 100, isn't it? Oh, there's 46 Republicans. Oh, yeah. Well, and you got two independents, but you know, Bernie would have gone with the Democrats. So two of the Democrats voted against it, too. That's going to be an interesting vote to break down. So, well, you know, as time goes on, we'll get the information on that. Jackie in Port Townsend, Washington. Hey, Jackie, what's up?
Hi. Well, I got some interesting info. One is an article in the Seattle Times today, but you were talking earlier about the tax code and the inequality of who benefits.
Right.
Well, I'm with the League of Women Voters, and we've been looking into this 501c3.
This is the IRS designation for a nonprofit group like the Community for Abused Kids that Louise and I started back in the 70s. That's still there. For schools, if you start a school, they're supposed to be charitable and educational institutions.
Well, it turns out that the commissioner of the IRS in 1959 was Dana Latham, and he started a company in California in 1934. And it's now one of the world's largest law firms, global in scope, international tax practice. And including in the firm alumni has been Secretary of Interiors, SEC Chair, White House Counsel, Director of DOJ, Enron Tax Force, Secretary of Homeland Security. And to top it all off, they contributed $3.2 million in free legal and consulting services to the defense of Jay Bybee.
Wow. Jay Bybee, the guy who wrote, who co-authored along with John Yoo, the memo that President Bush used as legal justification for torturing people.
Right. Plus, their current clients include Koch Industries, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, ExxonMobil, Philip Morris, and et cetera. Go figure. Right. Anyway, and another thing I was...
What does this have to do with 501c3s, though?
Well, because he's the one that changed the wording or that IRS board from operated exclusively to primarily engaged.
Ah, that happened in the 50s.
Tax breaks for the, you know, Citizens United.
So now, and which is the rationale that Karl Rove says he can spend 49% of his money on politics, basically, but 51% has to be pure education.
Right, but now the league is kind of in a pickle because they're talking about, well, we have to possibly disallow political forums and voter registration and stuff because it's political activity. Well, you know what? That's the common good and the social welfare, and so we need to go back to the original regulations.
Yeah, I agree. It should be 100%. I totally agree with you, Jackie. Thank you for calling and sharing that.
Go ahead. There was an article today in the Seattle Times, a little tiny article. We just had a GMO thing on our ballot here in Washington. Mm-hmm. Well, now the grocery manufacturers they want to sue the state because the state said that they were it was against our campaign finance law.
Right.
They say they did not just say we haven't broken the law. What they are saying is some of your campaign finance laws are unconstitutional.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I always hate it when that guy steps on me. Thank you, Jackie, for the call. We'll have to carry on the conversation later, but thank you so much for calling. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So that means one Republican voted in favor of it. You had your math wrong. Okay. So Mary Landrieu and Bennett, it's Bob Bennett, and it's not Mo Udall, it's his son. But anyhow, Udall, the two senators from Colorado and the senator from Louisiana voted against extending unemployment benefits. That's interesting. I would love to know what their rationale was for that. I guess we'll find out. Pete in Beaver Springs, Pennsylvania. Hey, Pete, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. One quick point and one quick rant here. I was born in 47, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Corporate personhood, I've always scratched my head about this with the Supreme Court. Looking at an old birth certificate from 47, the title of the document is Certificate of Live Birth.
Right.
Okay, but that doesn't seem to matter to the Supreme Court. That's the point. And
why is that? I don't understand.
I don't know. Is a corporation alive? I don't think it is.
Oh, I see what you're saying. When the Supreme Court says corporations are persons. Yeah, they haven't, you know, quite said that corporations are fully human. What they have said is that they can be actors in the political arena. And
yeah, I guess so. We have to buy that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we need to amend the Constitution to say that they're wrong, you know, and that's movetoamend.org.
Got it. Second part, TPP. That's just another one scratching my head. I'm looking at a phrase here, four words, promote the common good. Hello, the elected officials, okay, they ignore our wishes. I think part of that's always there. But when they ignore our needs, that becomes painful, you know, not once, you know, like Maslow's hierarchy, very
right.
quickly. When the elected officials, when their actions are detrimental to our needs, like clean air, clean water, safe food in favor of corporations, that to me is treason. Thanks for taking the call, and tag your rant.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. Thanks a lot for the call. I do appreciate it. I agree with you. I'm not sure I'd use the word treason. I think that it's unconstitutional. I mean, the Constitution lays out the purpose of creating the legislature in the preamble. It says that it is done to promote the general welfare, the common good. And ain't so much what's going on. Liz in West Hollywood, California, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Liz, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
And Louise,
same to you.
And the whole staff.
Thank you.
Before, when you were talking about Verizon and the decision on the Internet,
mm-hmm.
it made me think, and then you mentioned Bank of America, and all of a sudden this thought popped into my head. Bingo. Remember that girl who wrote on the Internet that she was going to get out of Bank of America because they were going to put fees on the debit cards?
Right.
If everybody who has Verizon or can have Verizon calls Verizon and says, okay, you want to play that way? We're not going to use your services anymore.
But there, in a lot of places, Verizon is the only Internet service provider.
I understand that, but like someplace like Los Angeles, we have multiple Internet providers, and those people can make a big impact.
Yeah, well, that's okay. In that case, that makes a lot of sense. So you might want to let them know what you think about it. Liz, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for the suggestion. It's a great one. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. This hour today brought to you by EcoWine.com, the organic wine company. Pesticide-free organic wines imported from France. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Our camera is being cleaned for the shot, right, you know, over our shoulder here to the Capitol building. Anyhow, Sean in Indianapolis. Hey, Sean, it's been a long time since I've heard from you. How are you?
Yeah, Tom, how's it going?
Good, good. Thank you for calling.
Good. Yeah, good here, too. Hey, Happy New Year.
Thank you. Ditto.
Hey, you know, there's been like a really long campaign to get the two backbones of the Internet, the two free backbones of the Internet out of the United States and put it into a more politically neutral country like Holland and Sweden and Norway. And, you know, this might be the one thing that we can all agree on, left, right, and center, you know, to wake us all up. Unite us.
This might push basically the regulation, ICANN, ICANN, I think it is, the international whatever, the group that assigns IP addresses to names and things like that, moving that and moving the basic regulation of the Internet to a more neutral country, that this might do it, you think?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, interestingly enough, I've been on the Internet since 1984.
Uh-huh.
And there was up until the early 90s, there was a really big talk about what's going to happen if we bring the Internet to the masses, you know? And to this day, there's a really big argument in places on the Internet that not everybody knows about, but us old folks could still, you know, convene.
Right.
And it's still a very hot, pressing topic.
Yeah.
But this might be the one thing that really unites us, especially here in this country.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see. And we'll, you know, keep an eye on this and see how it plays out. Sean, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
One other thing, too.
Yeah.
There are still your local small Internet service providers like Lightlink. You know, they're out of Ithaca. For $50 a month, $50 a year, I get free email, and that's PGP, and just a text. Shell.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But you're still having to do that over a local ISP, right?
Well, you know what? I'm not sure about that because they're out of Ithaca, and I'm able to get their services here in Indianapolis.
Huh? But are you using a cable connection, or are you using DSL, or what?
No, I'm using wireless.
So you're using wireless with a local phone company, then presumably, or you're using wireless with them, and they're leasing space from that phone company.
Yes. That's what's going on.
I see. Okay, yeah, Clearwire does that around the country. And
so, I mean, you know, Lightlink is a really, I've been with them for like 7 years, and they're just perfect.
Huh.
And it's ran by a handful of people, and they're all very socially conscious.
What's the name of the company again, Sean?
Lightlink,
L-I-G-H. Lightlink, LIGHTLINK.
Yeah, and they also have a lot of really great fractal stuff, too. And you mentioned fractals a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Is their website lightlink.net or .com? Or
lightlink.com.
Okay.
And artmatrix.com. ArtMatrix.com.
Artmatrix.com. Okay.
Yeah, I don't have anything to do with Lightlink, but I did do some fractals for them with Artmatrix. And, you know, they actually did some videos, like for Seal and Paul McCartney and Suit Dragons. And
fascinating stuff. Sean, I want to get one more call in here before the end of the hour, if I may. Thank you so much for calling. It's been years and years and years we've been talking, and it's great to hear your voice and know that you're well.
Are we going on our 10th year?
Yeah, we are in our 10th year.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, yeah. So you've been with us from the beginning. Sean, thank you so much. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
And Happy New Year. Great to hear from you, my friend. Sean has been through over 300 surgeries. He's really, really had some challenges. Bethany in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Bethany.
Tom. Thank you for taking my call again. I'm a big fan. Again, I'm sad I call when I'm disappointed. But I think Benghazi is a big story. The last time our ambassador was killed was 1979.
But we now have the investigation by the Army and by the CIA that says you're not going to let me talk?
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say what I wanted to say.
Okay, what do you want to say?
I want to say that I knew it was a bad sign when Obama picked up Reagan's biography, but I didn't realize how bad. In 1979, very bad decisions were made. I think we can agree on that. And when we talk about UN intervention, because I was kind of challenged, I walked into Black Hawk Down when my son, who I would never, you know, when he was 17, sighed. I would never, ever let him see that movie. I mean, it's just a dehumanization.
Yeah.
And what we're doing in Africa to fight, you know, China for trade. I mean, the decisions we make were so awful. So awful. And I hate to see liberals kind of called out when they defend drones and they defend...
Well, I'm not defending drones, Bethany, on this show. And thank you for the call. I don't disagree. We have some serious problems. We have some disagreements with the president. I'll still take him over Mitt Romney any day of the week. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have the latest news and information you won't be hearing from the corporate owned news media, net neutrality, the TPP, and more. And we'll be talking with United Steelworker President Leo Girard about the TPP and Fast Track. And plus, Tim Carpenter from Progressive Democrats of America. Tag, you're it. Get out there, get active. Occupy something like the FCC.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at stamps.com and our website, tomhartman.com. You support our programs and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at tomhartman.com. Thank you.